Welcome to another episode of the Politatine Podcast. You are currently listening to the one-hour segment of our podcast. To listen and watch the full conversation, head over to politatine.com and click the Watch tab in the top right. If that's not your thing, we appreciate you and hope that you enjoy the episode. Rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Politatine Podcast. My name is Damian Galvin, and I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathal. I'm the co-host of this Politatine Podcast. Back again for our second ever live streamed, I guess. Not live streamed, actually. This time it's just video.
Yep.
But we're back, and again, for another amazing episode after what happened this Wednesday, actually, with the Capitol getting swarmed by Trump supporters and seditionists, as I and Damian both said on Thursday on our podcast, which released today. It is a Friday. It is 10 o'clock, 10:45 p.m. We've been troubleshooting the video for quite a while now. But how was your last, I guess, day? That's all we've had since last podcast. How was your last Thursday?
Oh man, it's been stressful. You know, getting back into the groove of you know, this is probably a conversation that we're gonna end up having today, but virtual school and online, you know, and in person school, but getting back into the groove of a virtual school, especially in the county that we're in, is very difficult because you know how teachers always talk about man, being able to see you, first of all, for those of you listening, just want to preface this. For those of you listening to the podcast, the audio version, if you guys actually want to watch the video version, you can check it out on our YouTube channel. That's just Politatine. So come over, check us out. You guys can see us. You guys can see how we're talking. But it's so nice to be able to see you.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
like for those of you that don't understand, we've been filming this podcast without seeing each other. And like just being able to kind of see the other person's facial expressions makes such a big difference. Like it makes it so much more personable. Like me and Varun had like an hour and 30-minute discussion yesterday in our law class, and it feels so like that's what we really strive to have on the podcast. But it's so much more difficult when you can't see each other. So it's nice to be able to see you, Varun. But either way, I was gonna talk about, you know how teachers always talk about like how college, the true like hard part of college is the fact that you're just free. You can go to class if you want to, and if you don't want to, then you just don't go. Yeah, that's how virtual school is, man. A virtual school, like if you want to show up, like you show up, and if you don't, like you can just do it all on Friday. And sometimes, like honestly, teachers won't even count it, like if you don't do it on Friday, they're like, just get it done by the end of the semester. Like especially, I know that you're doing a virtual class with Gavs.
I'm doing my first Georgia Virtual Schools class online. It's AP European History because I love history, as you guys all know. If you don't know, then I love history. I'm a big history buff, as is Damian. We're both big law nerds. But yeah, European history has been fun. It's my first week of the class, and so it's good meeting people online. Obviously very different than being in person, but it's a good approach. You know, I think that our county's doing well with virtual school, but I think that we have to talk about just the lack of a mask mandate. Besides, that's another discussion to have.
Yep.
The first one to have, I think, that is like you mentioned, the teacher substitute we had in our law class, and how she kind of noticed the conversation that we were having. So me and Damian had a long conversation, which basically took up the entire class period when we were supposed to be doing our work, but we weren't doing much of that. We're mostly talking about how just economic theory and between more conservative and more leftist economic theory and which one's more beneficial to our nation. And so she heard our conversation at the very end of the class period. She came up and she was like, well, this was an extremely, extremely civil conversation, and we need more of that in our nation. And I was like, you know, we do it for a living. I was going to say, you know, we do it for a living. Monday and Friday, and I think Damon was singing the exact same thing. We're on the same wavelength there.
But dog, I thought she was going to walk up to us and tell us to shut up, to be honest.
So I thought we were in trouble because we didn't do any of our work for the entire day. And so the first thing that was through my mind was like, how do I make up an excuse to show her that I've been doing work, which I hadn't been doing work. And I know you had some notes written up, and you were asking me like, what are the basic stuff of what this is? And you write down some notes. But I had nothing, so I was panicking. I'm sure you were panicking, but
nah, dog,
at the end of the day,
I'm always
calm.
Our
civil discourse.
Yeah,
and it's a good thing to have to be able to do that in a classroom, even when somebody we disagreed for a lot of the discussion.
Yes,
very vehemently, but we did so in a civil manner. I think that America needs to learn about that, especially in light of what happened on Wednesday. I believe that was yesterday that we had that discussion, and so it's representative of what I've been wanting to talk about in the podcast for quite a while, and what Joe Biden talked about today, the fact that we need to have more conversations and more civil discussions, because people are decent, I think, in a lot of senses, and the fact that people are maybe disillusioned, and I think that the people who stormed the Capitol on Wednesday were incredibly disillusioned. And we need to fix that through conversation and love and embracing arms, and not through denying that conversation and through warfare with your words.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 1,000%. You know, happy we didn't get in trouble for that. But you know, I'm always smooth with the excuses. I gotta actually do the work virtually again. Unfortunately, you know, it wouldn't disclose personal information, but we do, you know, it actually has to do with the conversation that we're having today. I think that this is going to be, because I saw your tweets, right? So for those of you that don't know, the Politine Twitter account, like Varun's just killing Twitter, for the Politine account. And, he was engaging with some people that, that were talking about, the action, I guess, inaction, right? By Dr. Bearden. Especially in regard like to this semester, more so than last semester, with the mask mandate. But we had a substitute because our teacher, you know, got COVID. And and a lot of individuals are getting COVID, not just, you know, in the nation, but like in our county now. It's hitting very close to home. And you know, on that subject matter, a couple days ago, my uncle lost his brother. My uncle on my, so it, my, God, this is gonna, you know, this is a, you know, explaining like family trees are always so hard. My dad's sister's husband's brother. Oh, there you go. Smooth. My uncle's brother, but not blood related, right, to me. Lost his brother to COVID complications. And actually, while I was in Texas, you remember I was picking up London, my Doberman.
Yeah.
We were so we own a ranch out there. You know, I actually, if you're an OG listener, you guys remember that I filmed a couple podcast episodes like literally in the middle of nowhere. So it was pretty. That was pretty cool.
That was with a guest, I think. May have been with.
We might have filmed with the guest
because we had a couple of episodes with you in the ranch, and I remember it was fun. It was interesting episode that we had, but it was one of our OG episodes, maybe number 5. Number 6, one of those very beginning, and the audio didn't change too much because the audio was bad anyways. It was very fun. But go ahead.
The way that we have conversations changed, and we had we did have Representative Morris, and I did film over there, but I had the situation figured out a little bit more. I didn't have to film out of the back of a car, but I went to go pick up my Doberman, and we were supposed to meet with my uncle and stuff, and like hang out, because that's what we do. We co-own the ranch with them. It's like 60 some acres that we own with them, with like cows and stuff. So we were gonna go, you know, chill. We have a little house out there. And then he got COVID. Like, he got COVID because he was meeting with some lawyers. Man, like this suit that we're, this whole like conversation has gone like so everywhere. But he was meeting with some lawyers because he's the manager of the overseer of a construction company, and some dude like fell off of a ladder and like got in, like he's in a coma.
Wow.
So like they're trying to sue his company, and like they're just trying to sue everyone. So like he had to meet with some lawyers and whatnot. Like his company's fine, but he had to meet with lawyers for like 3-4 hours. So he got COVID from there. And his oxygen like dropped a lot, and he was hospitalized while we were in Texas. So that's why I stayed out there a couple more days. And I had to take like midterms late just because of the whole situation. But his brother was put on a ventilator while we were out there. And, you know, every day that you're on a ventilator, your chances of surviving just like go down.
Yeah.
Unfortunately he did pass away. He was an individual. Like, he wasn't just a stranger. He was an extremely sweet guy. And you know, I know that CNN kind of does a segment where they, you know, where they remember individuals. And this guy, he had a 10-month-old daughter. He had a beautiful family. He was an amazing man. He actually took me to Disney. And he paid, you know, he paid for a lot of the expenditures. He was not shy to if you needed something, he was there. A good dude, and unfortunate that I didn't get to spend more time with him. But you know, the sad thing is that at this point, this story has been repeated over 300,000 times in this country, and it's growing. And in action, you know, I'm not saying that that Dr. Bearden is directly responsible for any deaths. Maybe at one point I would have held that that point of view and been more aggressive with it, but his inaction can definitely result indirectly or directly in some very negative consequences. And I think that the raid on the Capitol showed that, like, this isn't, it's like the masks aren't just political things anymore. And like, we need to get over that stuff. Like, we need to get over the BS about masks being political things. Democratic processes aren't political. Like, it's just how we do things. Like, you wear a mask to protect each other. And we're having spikes, and we really just need a mask mandate.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for your loss, Damien. I know it hurts. Every single loss that we've had from the virus hurts. And forget hundreds of thousands, millions of Americans are hurting because they have family members and friends, and associates and coworkers and et cetera, neighbors who have died from this pandemic. To be honest with you, every single American who has died goes down as a real loss in my book. You know, every single time a person dies, I feel like it's rightful for me to grieve, but more than grieve, I think it's important for us to be advocating and advocating for change and things like we're advocating for. And today I released a tweet storm, five whole tweets, and reminiscent of how we'll talk about Trump getting his Twitter taken away, his permissions taken away. But I went on a tweet storm and not necessarily seeing that, just I was very compelled to tweet. And today I was tweeting about the fact that we talked with Dr. Bearden, our superintendent, if you guys are our OG listeners. I know some of you guys have been on here for quite a while. We talked with Dr. Bearden about the prospect of having a mask mandate in our county, a countywide mask mandate for students over the summer. And it was a day before school opened up. And so it was very, very last minute, not necessarily our fault in doing so. But I think that the point there was that we couldn't have a mask mandate because of the fact that our timing was quite late. And because of the fact that you know, his main point was that students need to come back to school because they're suffering from homelessness and from mental illnesses, and they need the school for support morally, physically, and financially. And so our point, our counterpoint for the most part, was to say that to maintain the environment through which students can gain economic and mental and physical help, we have to maintain the health and safety of students and the health and safety of staff members. And so our point was that to keep schools open and for no ulterior motive, we have to enforce a mask mandate. And it is the only way to maintain safety and health and also maintain that compelling reason to keep schools open. And so that was our main argument, me and Damien. And the other one was the fact that for Scythe County schools in specific, and many schools across the nation, for the matter of fact, most schools across the nation and state have outlawed certain attires and dresses worn by girls. And so if they can do that, there is no question that they can outlaw not wearing a mask without a medical permit to do so.
Yeah.
And so I see no compelling reason except to placate a certain political party that we need to do so continuously. And the bigger thing is that a couple of weeks ago, it became extremely clear when the county had to shut down and during midterms week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a full in-person learning student, so I was studying for midterms during the exact time at which this got released. And I was like, well, I've been studying for weeks and weeks and weeks anticipating these midterms being in person. And to switch up the whole thing because of the fact that Lambert High School, one of our local high schools that I'm redistricted to originally, South Forsyth High School and Denmark, but Lambert had around 30 to 35, and some by some reports, 40 cases, I'm not sure about the exact count, of COVID in the matter of a couple of days. And so this was rippling school to school to school to school. And so they had to close down schools. I think it would have gone far differently if we enforced masks. I know you're probably searching that up, Damien.
Yeah, I got
you. Check me. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
I got you.
The bigger thing is that, you know, what surprises me is that, you know, we heard reports of a new strand of the coronavirus coming out last week that's more contagious, not necessarily a thing we can't cure and stop with the vaccine, but something that's more contagious, infects more people. And what surprised me is hearing this morning that reports that the new strand had reached the United States were not evidentially proven. and that they were fabricated because of the fact that one of the White House coronavirus directors on Pence's task force speculated that the rise in COVID-19 cases was associated with that new strand of the virus, whereas for all practical reasons, it was associated with American carelessness. And the carelessness of our administration and the carelessness of some of our school affiliates, not going to name any names, but it's solely a byproduct of our own actions. And so I think people are trying to shift blame to students and a new virus. But the fact is, you're not having real direction on a local, on a statewide, and on a national level. And I hope that changes for the sake of our nation, because I don't want to be in this pandemic for longer. I know Damien doesn't. I know any of our viewers. I know no American wants to stay in this virus for longer than we have predicted right now. So the best thing we can do is advocate for change, because every life matters and every lost life means a higher motivation and a higher urgency to the advent and the act of creating change.
Bruno, are you saying all lives matter? But sorry, I completely threw up.
Funny joke. I would never. You know me. I would never say all lives matter.
Yeah, right.
Not because I don't believe that all lives don't matter. It's because all lives matter is in blatant protest to Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe that Black Lives Matter, and that Black Lives Matter at this point in time matter more than non-minority lives, to be honest, because they're in more danger.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, to be honest,
it's not a moral thing. It's about who's in danger, who needs help at this point.
Yeah.
What a conversation switch. Yeah.
I got Bruno riled up. I accused him of saying all lives matter. You got to defend his standpoint. And just to quickly, I'm just going to quickly say this because you brought it up and it just came off my mind. And then I'll go back to the COVID thing, because I did want to say Dr. Bearden's argument for not having the mask. But how stupid is it? Like, all these idiots, right? And the word for it, it was funny because, for those that watch my live streams, I think the younger audience caters to the live streams. I think the older ones cater to the podcast. But for those of you that watch my live streams and the podcast, I suppose, you guys know that Hassan Piker, Hassan Abi, is a big influence of mine when it comes to how to entertain, more so than policy and whatnot. But he made a joke that being a hog was a what's it called, like a diagnosed disability. It's a pre-existing condition, that's what he called it. And symptoms of being a hog include blatant racism and some other, like, you know, just being extremely gullible and whatnot. And I say that to say, you know, what a hog calling to say back the blue and then show up to the Capitol and beat up a bunch of police officers and actually kill a police officer. You were saying how all lives matter is just in protest of Black Lives Matter. It's the same thing with back the blue. They don't care. They don't care about police officers. They genuinely do not care about police officers. They care about police officers that kill Black people. And they just want to support them. But nonetheless, and minorities for that case. But nonetheless, if you remember the conversation that we were having with Dr. Bearden, you said that there was no excuse for not mandating the masks. Well, his excuse, and I remember that we talked about it at the time, saying that we would re-examine,
reevaluate.
We're doing it now.
We're doing it now.
But his excuse was that he had already passed his proposal. You remember that he said we already voted on it by the council, and the council, it's too late to change it, you know. And my argument was always that it's never too late to do what's best. And although your actions could have already had their negative consequences in the case of individuals like Lindsey Graham, who is now doing what's best, Kelly Loeffler, who's now doing the bare minimum, but, what's now doing the right thing. It's never too late to try to change, to do the right thing. And in this case, I think that he had a 2-week period, almost 4-week period, because of the fact that we closed schools down, to reevaluate, say, hey, this isn't getting better. And you remember one of my main criticisms of the mask expectation?
Which one of them? There's many.
Well, one of my main ones, and one of the things that I predicted it, dog. I predicted it then, and you know what? I've been on a roll of predicting things now, but pandemic fatigue. That people were just going to get tired of wearing their masks. I definitely have a couple people, me and you, can think of that have gotten tired of one person in particular. But people have gotten tired of wearing their masks, and they're getting mask fatigue. And not only, and you know, the implications of getting tired of not wearing your mask aren't just literally not wearing your mask. It's parties. And we just had New Year's. We just had Christmas. Watch. I'm calling it now. The cases are going to go up again. And it's going to be catastrophic.
Yeah. And that's the problem with opening up a week after New Year's Day and Christmas Day, especially when you have no mask mandate in place. And I think that we had a petition written out by one of my friends and one of my affiliates with high school Democrats in my state, Katie Gates, which has gotten around 2,000 to 3,000 signatures. I forget what it's at right now, maybe even at 4,000, but it was a widely spread petition to Dr. Bearden telling him to institute a mask mandate on a countywide level like we've been calling for quite a while. And I think that it's important that we sign these kinds of things to exert pressure on our public officials. But the worst thing was that Dr. Bearden didn't even look at it during his meeting. And that's, I think, the important of act of conversations. We had a conversation with Dr. Bearden, and I think that we came to a common ground on a couple of things. Obviously, the end result was not as we liked, but having that conversation, it really opened my mind up to the toughness of that decision and the fact that, you know, while it may not be tough for us, Dr. Bearden does have pressures. He has it from parents who don't want to have a mask mandate. He has it for parents who do. And so for him, it is a choice, and I think he chose wrong, but it is important to remember the high dilemma that public officials have to their people. And I think that to your point about Lindsey Graham and Kelly Loeffler and people who reversed their statements made earlier about the election needing to be impeded upon, I think history will always remember their flaws. They will never forget their flaws. But the fact of the matter is that when it mattered the most, they chose to be on the right side of history. And history also will not forget that. So I think that you're defined by your actions, sometimes in the moment, and making the right choice is always the right decision. No matter what you stuck by, Will talked about, you know, the fact that Mike Pence was, by some standards, a coward for leaving President Trump when it mattered most. I think he was a patriot. And that's my opinion. But I think he was a patriot. And it's because he stood by democracy when democracy needed it most, needed his help most. And we talked about, I don't know if we talked about this fact, but a couple of things. Speaking of not wearing a mask, I think that we had one of the most blatant infiltrations upon that saying with Marjorie Taylor Greene, the U.S. representative from Georgia's 14th district, I believe, going to the Capitol building and come in with no mask on and argue without a mask on with Capitol Police just about the fact that she was permitted to not wear a mask and go in. And the issue with that is quite clear to all of you guys, I hope, by now, because if Marjorie Taylor Greene or any other official, for that matter, came in with no mask on and had COVID on, it could compromise the entirety of our government, all of which was convened in one particular place.
Yep.
And so the thought of that happening crossed my mind that day when she did it. And that was before the whole Capitol, the Capitol situation. And then at that point, I was like, my worst fear just came true. But that's a whole other story. One thing that I saw just before we continue was, I think it's a good talking point for the future, but John Fetterman, we had Gisele Fetterman, the first lady of second lady of Pennsylvania, come on, and her husband John Fetterman's lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania, as you guys all know. And during the hearing to kind of just put one of his democratically elected Democratic colleagues into office, John Fetterman was taken out of his chair by a Republican colleague and replaced by a Speaker pro tempore who was Republican because they did not agree with the fact that a democratically elected legislator was going to be in essence, put into office. And yep. So it was a dilemma that Fetterman had to face in the situation. I hope you guys all watched the tapes that they released on multiple channels. But it was a dilemma between essentially breaking the law and failing, or breaking procedure, sorry, and failing to recognize a congressman and breaking the law. Mm-hmm. Because by no circumstance could Fetterman have impeded upon the inauguration of a democratically elected and state secretary of state certified congressman from that state. And it was completely, completely a farce. And after that, Fetterman announced his candidacy for the U.S. Senate. And what a way to throw some backlash upon just what happened, because I think it was absolutely preposterous. We're hopefully going to be having some guests on from the whole situation to talk about just mm-hmm. how preposterous that was. But just beyond the Capitol, we talked about state governments being attacked. We talked about Fetterman being taken out of his seat for literally upholding democracy. Things were happening around the election across America. And this was not by any standard an isolated instance. And I think that, you know, it's going to take a broad and a widespread reevaluation of where we stand morally and politically to reaffirm and just change the trajectory of this nation as it's going right now. And I'll talk about Biden later, but that was a couple of things I wanted to get off my chest about today.
Yeah, and it was good that you got it off your chest. And if you saw, for those that are watching visually, I don't know if you caught it, my facial expressions changed a lot during what you were saying. I went to Twitter to check the petition that that you were talking about, just to, you know, just to see how many signatures it had gotten to report that, and found a video that CNN released of a cop getting crushed by Trump supporters. We do have the ability to display that image for our visuals, you know, for everyone watching the podcast on YouTube. But I think we choose rather not to. If you guys want to see the image, go see it on your own. But it's a video. It's uploaded by the New York Times, and I sent you the link to the video, Varun.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Yeah. And you know, this is just sickening. I waited to watch the video till I was here with you. It's just, you know, you can't say. And I saw disturbing commentary from Fox News yesterday, and you know, I'm done watching the video, but I saw disturbing commentary from Fox News, and basically there is no comparison between what happened on the Capitol and what happened during the Black Lives Matter protest. Listen, the rioting, the looting, the vandalism, the shooting, I condemn it. You know, it's wrong, it's bad. But damn, I say it's warranted. I don't stand for it. I don't stand behind it. But Martin Luther King Jr. said, riots are the voices of the unheard. Because when you try talking, and when you try getting elected to democratically elected positions, and when you try yelling, and when you try kneeling, and when you try marching, and when you try protesting by every means available, expressing your First Amendment rights, and still you are murdered by those sworn to protect and serve, fuck your target. Who cares about your target? Listen, I understand these small businesses that were burnt down and damaged, and I feel bad for them. I genuinely do. And maybe Republicans, I would say, were right on this matter if during the first COVID relief bill, they would have actually done something for small businesses. But because of their inaction in that matter, 40% of small businesses closed down. And they would rather help the big corporations and make sure that they stay afloat, just like they're trying to do with the $2,000 relief bill. Because, Varun, I don't know if you know, but they're trying to protect corporations from lawsuits. And they're not trying to protect small businesses from being sued by their employees for getting COVID. Who they're actually trying to protect, and I read an amazing article on this, are long-term care facilities that are paying their employees $12 and $10 an hour in cities like New York, which is not a livable wage, especially not for someone who's taking care of our elderly, the people that we should care about most in our society. And it's disgusting that lawmakers want to pass provisions in bills like this, and they would rather not care about small businesses. So yes, I do feel bad about the small businesses. As a matter of fact, my parents... Here, hold on. Let me take out my piece of gum because I chew gum on live streams, but right now I'm getting pissed off, and it's not a good mix. But my parents were small business owners. Failed small business owners. And they didn't fail because we weren't selling enough goddamn tacos. They didn't fail because people weren't coming in the restaurant. They failed because of the government's difficulty. You know, being an entrepreneur is defined as an individual willing to take a risk to start a business. And while it is a risk, the government does nothing to give you, a tarp to fall on, a net. So yes, I do feel bad for these, and I can relate to these individuals to some extent. I saw how much it hurt my parents, you know, to have to go through the small business, through the selling of the small business and whatnot. And I can relate to some extent to these business owners that had their buildings burned down. But you know what, Varun? I can also relate to some extent to the individuals that have suffered at the hands of police brutality. I saw my father arrested by 6 police officers, tackled to the ground when I was 5 years old. You know, so I can see both sides of the situation here. And I'm not talking respectively from just one standpoint with an implicit bias. No, I think that if we're going to burn down a small gas station to make sure that individuals don't die at the hands of protesters, again, I can't say that it's the right thing to do, but if that's the result, if that's the consequence of that action, I'm sorry. That's the action that I'm going to take. So the riots cannot be compared to a couple one narcissistic man being a little crybaby about the fact that he lost fair and square. They cannot be compared to a group of, frankly, you know, you said they weren't Republicans, but a group of Republicans that are going to stand behind this narcissist and feed him his egos because feed his ego. Because you know what? I thought for a very long time, and to a certain extent, it is an echo chamber of thoughts. Donald Trump puts out an idea and his constituents repeat it. And then he goes, see, they believe it. And then they go, you know, see, he's saying it. And so they're just listening to what they're both saying, what both parties are saying. And they're both manipulating each other and both lying to each other.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. But going back to it, you know, I said earlier, literally minutes ago, and I haven't even seen this video, that you can't say that blue lives, oh, back the blue, baby. Damn it. Do it. Back the blue. Make sure that they're receiving the proper training that they need so that we don't have to protest. Make sure that they're actually receiving funding to programs that make sure that they can protect and serve the community as they're meant to, so that African American men and women aren't being incarcerated at disproportionate rates. Make sure that the blue is backed. But don't be a hypocrite and say, back the blue, don't defund the police, when you're killing them. And don't say, and you know what, the thing that pisses me off the most, especially about what Fox News was doing, and Kayleigh McEnany said it yesterday or the day before, and it was some absolute BS, said, don't let what a few rioters and looters did at the Capitol represent the whole Trump movement. Well, what about when 93% of Black Lives Matter protests were peaceful, but you let 7%, which first of all were instigated by police officers, every single one of those percentages were instigated by police officers, because how stupid can you be to go, hey, you know what, there's people protesting against police brutality, yeah, let's beat them with batons. And then say that they got aggressive. And then say that they were mad. They were mad. And then you show up there armed. And you show up there in rows of officers with weapons and batons and tear gas and stun grenades and rubber bullets. And you shoot. And you know what? For once, the one time that officers in the United States did not discriminate was when there was white and black people joined together advocating for black men to not be murdered, for Mexican men to not be murdered, for people of minority descent and minority communities to not be murdered. That's the one time cops didn't discriminate. Bullets for everyone. Tear gas for everyone. Everyone gets the same treatment. These events cannot be compared, in the hypocrisy needs to stop. You know, there was conversations about the nation healing yesterday, and I thought for a very long time that the Democratic Party was the ones that needed to bring the Republican Party in and say, you know what, we're all together. Because to be honest, the Democratic Party is accepting. The Democratic Party is accepting. Whatever you say, I mean, come on. You can't say that we're not accepting when the Republican Party has had the standpoints that gay people don't deserve to have rights, that transgender people aren't real, and they're gender dysphoric. Like, you can't be saying stuff like that then be like, yeah, we're the party of the people. We represent everyone. It's BS. And I had the standpoint for a very long time that the Democratic Party was the one that had to bring people together, that the Democratic Party had to bring the right in. But what I've realized is that the Republicans and the majority, and I'm sorry, the majority of Republicans, and I hope that individuals listening to this podcast are different. The majority of Republicans, they don't want to. They just don't want to. They just don't want to listen to fact. They just don't want to listen to reason. And the thought process has been winning. And we had a conversation about selfishness in the Republican Party, and you said that it's not all Republicans, but you know what? It's a Republican platform. Win at all costs. Win at all costs. And Joe Biden said that the vote is sacred. That's BS. The vote's not sacred. Because if the vote was sacred, then when Republicans try to disenfranchise individuals, Democrats wouldn't just watch it go by. Hey, that's there. That's Georgia. But if they're going to do that in Georgia, they can disenfranchise whoever they want in Georgia. No, we would take them out, round them up, and tell them. We would do what we did in Salem, and we would throw them in the water. See if they can swim. Because Joe Biden is right. The right to vote is sacred, so it should be treated as such. I'm tired. I'm sick and tired. And right now isn't a time of protest, at least not for my side, right? For the side advocating for that Black Lives Matter and that everyone deserves to be treated equally. It's not a time for protest, but I'm still upset and I'm still mad. I'm still mad at the fact that the Republican Party, their only platform has been hypocrisy. For the last 20 years, their only platform has been hypocrisy.
Yeah. And I think that you made a very passionate claim, and I respect it, and I think that it was absolutely eloquent, and I applaud you for it. In the interest of us being a opinionated podcast, I want to make clear that we try to stick to our views as much as possible. And me and Damien are up front. We tell you if we're going to be opinionated, and we are. You know, we're both liberal individuals. So if you're a Republican watching this, I think that what I have in terms of a message is a couple of things. I wrote down a couple of key points as you were speaking, just so I could get a tally of what you said and what I have in response. Yeah. A lot of things. So I'm going to have to speak for quite a while.
Don't worry about it, man.
and it was good. The first thing that I think I had to say was that, in my opinion, the riots weren't warranted, but for a similar reason for why you said they were warranted, in a sense. I think that riots and people robbing and looting gas stations and places of small business ownership tarnished the image of the movement of Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason for why I don't agree with that. I don't think it was warranted, because the whole movement was based upon the idea that we can peacefully protest, even if it takes days. And I know a lot about protests because I've been reading about Gandhi and MLK for quite a while. They suffered.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. And Gandhi starved, and he committed to hunger strikes for days and weeks and time. But with pain came eventual benefit. And I think that people are hurting in this nation. And that's why we have, and I think that you said at the very end, now's not the time for typical protest. Is there a time for protest? Because in the history of this nation, we've always been a constant pursuit of happiness has always accompanied us. Joe Biden has always said it. It's always been a constant pursuit of happiness and of a fair democracy. It's never been a fair democracy for everybody. It's always been that constant pursuit. And with that pursuit comes protest. With that pursuit comes language being spoken, speeches being given, starvation happening, protests happening, and civil discourse happens that way. And I think that the rioting, it completely tarnished the image for many people from both sides of the party. And that's my opinion.
Yeah, I understand.
And we can obviously differ on these certain things, but that's my opinion.
No. I agree with you, but my only response to that is that, first of all, studies have shown that peaceful protests lead to more change than riot and looting. So I agree with you on every front that the right way to go about change is peacefully. But what I was saying is that looting or rioting and breaking into the Capitol because you lost a fair democratic process, and looting and burning down a Target because you're dying in the streets at the hands of police officers are different things. And I would say if one were to be warranted, it would be Black Lives Matter. And to a certain extent and degree, it is warranted. Because they're angry for a real reason, not because they're babies. That's my only claim.
Yeah, I understand that. Mm-hmm. And my only point is that I don't think any of them's warranted. I think I understand why Black Lives Matter individuals rioted. Yeah. It's not warranted.
Maybe that's a better way to put it. Yeah, maybe that's a better way to put it.
And that's just how I would word it. But beyond that, I think that what you talked about, a lot of it was actually happening hypocrisy-wise right now. And I think that I want to clear up something that a lot of people have been talking about on social media waves. And you know where I'm going with this. It's the Antifa association that Matt Gaetz first made, I believe, on the House floor with the attack on the Capitol. First of all, let's make something clear. Every single individual on Twitter, with the exception of, and believe it or not, I saw this yesterday at 11 o'clock p.m. or something, I saw that some Republicans were saying that one of the people who was looting the Capitol was married to Nancy Pelosi's daughter. Let that sink in. Like, I'm just saying, and before I go into the real hard things about this and why it's wrong, I'm just saying, if you want to make up a conspiracy about something, do a better job, for God's sake.
Yeah, for real.
Like, for real. You can do better. Like, I'm telling you, because I mean it's easy to see through. But they have this one picture of a black man who's apparently associated with Antifa,
as per their news, of course they kick out the black guy, right?
And we'll talk about them kicking out a black woman later on. But this was a black guy that kicked out and said he was part of Antifa. Out of the tens and thousands of supporters, they found one person who apparently was a part of Antifa. And I want to reiterate something for many people. When you look at pictures of the Capitol building, you saw Trump posters. You saw Trump flags. You saw Stop the Steal. Does that look like something Antifa would put out? I'm just saying, appealing your logical sense of understanding. Would Antifa ever support the president when the president talks Antifa down every single day of his being? Does it make any sense? I just want to make that clear. Would Antifa attack a democratic institution when they're voting Joe Biden in as president if they so hate Trump? Doesn't make any logical sense. It doesn't. So why do you continue to support it? Why? And I think that what you said was to a degree right. It's the fact that they don't want, in some cases, and I think that I am this close. This close to losing it, but I'm not going to because as of now, I still have faith, and I hope that I have that faith. I may lose it, but I will tell you, a lot of people have made me start to believe that people do not want to see the light or understand the truth. They want to be bogged down. This is the most blatantly Trump thing ever done, and individuals continue to say that it was propagated by Antifa and Black Lives Matter. To you, I say, there is no saving. There is no saving grace because you fail to believe in every single other institution, every single other idea, every single other logical idea that we perpetrate, and there is no saving for you. But I think that just to go back on it, when I said it to a couple of my friends in school, they were talking about, well, Varun, I watched your podcast. One of them actually said this. I watched your podcast, and back when Black Lives Matter happened, you talked about how people like Jake Paul and white people who were part of the Trump gang were rioting and looting, taking advantage of what Black Lives Matter was doing. And for that reason, to a degree, it was warranted, the riots and looting. And I was like, well, to be honest with you, I was misspoken.
Sure.
To be honest with you, I was misspoken. And sure, there was people, there was substantial evidence of individuals sabotaging the Black Lives Matter movement, and I'm not going to call it that, sabotaging the rioting that was happening, creating fake accounts to organize riots and looting that were associated back with Trump figures and Trumpian figures. There was evidence. But the fact is that the majority of people were still rioters who were not associated with that movement. So yes, I was false. I want to reiterate that. I'm not trying to be a hypocrite here. And in that case, I was false. Here, I believe that I'm absolutely right because simply put, there is no logical basis for it. So stop believing it. Use your brains. And I keep saying it, for God's sake, use your brains. And I think that one thing that makes our country and will make our country a better place for everybody to live is if we can all understand when we're wrong. Because I feel like one of the issues with what's happening right now is because people are so put in and associated with this cult mentality that, you know, if I believe in election fraud, I can never reverse my viewpoints. To everybody out there, yes, you can. Yep. Lindsey Graham did.
Yep.
A couple of other senators did. Kelly Loeffler did. Tons and tons of Republicans have done it. So, yes, I have faith in you being able to do it because you absolutely can. And so any time is a good time to take responsibility for your mistakes and understand your mistakes. I just did it here. I think that taking responsibility and having humility is one of the most powerful things to driving discussion and bipartisanship and cooperation and mutual moralities, like I mentioned in the last podcast, across our nation, and we have to use it like it is. And one thing that you mentioned kind of at the very end there was how, and this is very, very big in my perspective, was how people are becoming bogged down in these echo chambers of their own being that they created to kind of perpetuate the same ideas, Democratic or conservative. I'm going to talk about the conservative end for a minute here. Parler. Let's talk about Parler. If you had seen the reports and even gone on Parler, which I haven't gone on it, but if you've gone on Parler, I wouldn't ever go on it. But I have gone on Twitter, and I've seen the exact same thing actually. Parler had pictures and tweets or parleys, they call it, parleys of people literally asking, can I ride in your car to Capitol Hill on the day of the January 6th rally? And you want to know why they couldn't take a plane? Because they had guns to bring. They had guns to bring. So don't tell me January 6th was a peaceful protest when people had to ride in other individuals' cars. People were on Parley, and I've seen screenshots of this, and I've seen people talking about this on channels like the New York Times and even on Twitter for that matter. People were asking, whoever needs a ride to Capitol Hill and has a gun, I will meet you on the interstate highway. I will pick you up and take you to Capitol Hill.
Yeah,
and so do not tell me it wasn't a violent protest because there was substantial evidence. But that's not the point I'm trying to make. My point is, why wasn't the FBI involved? Why wasn't the Federal Bureau of Investigations involved in the fact that people were tweeting out literal pictures of themselves bringing guns in the back of a car to Capitol Hill? And why was Capitol Hill the most understaffed location of a protest ever since the beginning of Black Lives Matter? It was... hypocrisy. And people have been talking about how governors and mayors across the area was like, were like, let's tone down the police presence from what was there during the Black Lives Matter days. The fact of the matter is that people brought guns to this rally. And I'm putting that in air quotations if you can't see me, into this rally. For Black Lives Matter protests, people bought their hearts and their minds, and for the most part, nothing else. People were tear gassed to make way for a presidential photo op.
Yep.
And
yep.
That's why they had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of armed protest, armed riot gear and riot officials. So don't tell me that this one was not validated to bring in riot, you know, the National Guard and riot people to protect the Capitol building. And so I'm just saying, what is the rationale behind why our nation's finest investigative institutions did not see the fact that this was happening in real time? People were plotting to literally bring weapons and promote violence on Capitol Hill in real time.
I can tell you
all of this information was published, right? Yeah. And one more thing, just to kind of give you some more information about the whole situation.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it yet, for all of our listeners, Apple this morning gave Parley a 24-hour little memorandum to say, if you don't strengthen your restrictions upon violent derogatory and those kinds of comments on your platform and violence-seeking comments on your platform, we will invoke violence-evoking. Thank you. Comments on our platform, we will take you off of our app store. And Android already temporarily took them off of their app store because the fact of the matter is that they were allowing for the rally, once again, air quotations, to become a riot because of the fact that they allowed people to congregate and organize weapons, as I said, to be brought there. And so there's a big problem with echo chambers. And we saw the problem on Wednesday. And so we have to just be logical about all these things. And before we resort to platforms by which there is no restrictions upon violence invoking language, like you just said, we have to think about the consequences of what these actions are. And the government must really investigate this, because we've seen much more government intervention in Black Lives Matter riots than we have seen in any of the Trump events that have happened so far. And I hope that our government does not subscribe to this vast hypocrisy that I've been seeing for the past couple of days. And now my mouth is hurting from speaking, so I'm going to hand it over.
Well, just to answer, you know, you asked why the FBI wasn't there, why the police weren't there, why the CIA wasn't there. The police, you know, they weren't there. And I'm going to be blatantly honest with you. And I hope that people, you know, I've been having a lot more hot takes. And I think that what I've seen, you know, the hot takes have been, some people really enjoy them, some people not so much, but you know, I'm building a base around these hot takes, and here's one for you. First of all of my takes are supported by facts. Sorry, not all my takes are supported by facts. Some of them are really literally just opinions, and I will clarify that. But 82% of police officers voted for Donald Trump. So you're asking why the police wasn't there. They were, dog. The police were there. They were there rioting. they were there breaking into the Capitol.
They were there taking selfies, if you haven't seen it.
That's what I'm saying. They were there opening up the gates. They were there, man. The CIA? This, why the CIA wasn't there? You mean the CIA that put crack in black neighborhoods? That CIA? Like, is that who we're talking about? The FBI that constantly, again, literally does what the CIA does, and a justice system, right? You're wondering why the justice system wasn't there, why the whole Department of Justice failed. I ask you, why do African Americans and minorities receive 20% longer prison sentences? What do you mean, why weren't they there? They weren't there because it was a bunch of white people. And you say, you know, they were bringing their guns and they were bringing, you know, Molotov cocktails and napalms. And, you know, there was weapons found in trucks and vans and whatnot. So you were wondering, you know, how come when protesters in Black Lives Matter show up with nothing? How come police show up armed and whatnot? Is because they're not protesters showing up with nothing. They're, and this is literally a stereotype, but I'm telling this from the bias of the police. 6'4", 280-pound black men that are showing up that are mad. Oh, it's a bunch of mad black guys. And you know what happens when black guys get mad? That's why they show up with guns. That's why they show up with batons. That's why they beat them. And they beat them. And you know what? Again, I think that the left, or liberals, not so much the left, but liberals do a really bad job with like their defund the police, you know, and their slogans and whatnot. And I think ACAB is one that is not, it's not bad. It's just a strong take. And unfortunately, police are part of a bastardized system. And I keep seeing reports of it, and I keep seeing more reports of it, and I keep seeing more evidence of it. And if you just held your breath and say, we shouldn't have said that, what happened on the Capitol? Literally, what just happened? You can't say it anymore. There's no need to hold your breath. And I, the same reason that I say it with such simplicity and with such ease is the same reason that I say that not all 75 million individuals that voted for Donald Trump have mush for brains. Only 32 million of them. And 32 million of those mush for brain Republicans are Republicans. They're not, you know, as Kaylee McAlooney. There you go. As she said, those individuals are not, you know, representative of what we stand for. They are, dude. They are representative of what you stand for. That's why they were there breaking into the Capitol to stop the electoral count. They are there. They are Republicans. They are. And it's okay. Acknowledge it. Just acknowledge it and say, you know what? Hey, we kind of went too far. We kind of went too far. You know, like, we were playing around a little bit, kind of like Lindsey Graham did. You know, I was playing around with this idea for like 4 years, like trying to get some votes and whatnot. Like, I kind of messed up. That's basically what Lindsey Graham said. He said, enough is enough. Like, I went along with it. You know, I was trying to get my bread. I was trying to get my power.
He said, me and Trump have had some good journeys so far, but enough is enough.
Exactly. And first of all, screw Lindsey Graham. I hope he gets primaried. You know, I hope he gets primaried.
Talk about Lindsey Graham. Talk about hypocrisy. The same sentence every single time.
Yeah, but they're Republicans. They're smooth brain Republicans. And that's okay. That's okay. Yeah. Just acknowledge it. And that's the first step in bringing these people over. And you know what? The other, 43 million? The other 43 million Republicans, they might not be racist to the extent that the 32 million are. They might not be bigots to the extent that they are. They might not, you know, suppress individuals to the extent that they are. But I strongly believe that 43 million individuals in this country that still voted for Donald Trump after all the rhetoric he spewed are still racist. They're not Klan. They're not wearing. Hold on. They're not wearing Klan robe racist. They're not burning down black people's house racist. They're not burning down gay people's homes homophobic. They're not putting burning crosses in front of transgender houses transphobic. They're all of these things. They're racist, homophobic, and transphobic because they live in communities that lack exposure. And these are my peers. I go to school with individuals that might not burn down my house, but trust me, they've made some insensitive comments about my race. And I'm sure you can say the same thing. And I'm not going to stand here and say, you know, the grotesque measures. And I think that the right gets really mad, Varun, that we just say like everyone's racist. That the left just says everyone's racist.
Cancel culture, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying we just, that's the difference. I'm saying we have to acknowledge that 75 million individuals are on varying degrees of you know what, I'm just going to say ignorance. Let's not even say racist. Varying degrees of ignorance. I'm not saying send them to like Cuba. Like, I'm not saying deport them. Like, oh, let's just leave them behind and move on with their society. Like, they lost the election. I'm saying let's try to show them that, hey, black people aren't lazy. They don't just live off of welfare. Like, this isn't a thing. Like, we have to show them that being gay isn't a mental illness. It's who some people are, and it's okay to be who you are, especially in this country. It's wrong to say that we live in a democracy when individuals are being disenfranchised by your party, man. How are you going to call for voter ID cards when some immigrants don't even have their country of origin? Refugees can't vote. How are you going to get a voter ID card if you can't get your birth certificate? It's ridiculous. And I'm happy that people are starting to see beyond the dog whistles. I'm happy that the left is starting to see beyond the dog whistles. And Joe Biden said something that made me go, hey, maybe neoliberals aren't that bad. He finally acknowledged that had it been black people storming the Capitol, it wouldn't have been one woman dead. And first of all, I keep seeing these claims that no people died during the Black Lives Matter protests. That's not true. Black men died while protesting. Gunshots, beatings, medical conditions, all of the above happened.
I mean, hold up. Why did they begin the movement in the first place? Why was the movement beginning?
I know. It was so stupid.
Was kneeled on for 8 minutes and 46 seconds and died because of it. So don't tell me somebody didn't die during the Black Lives Matter movement. It's false.
Yeah, it was completely idiotic. He acknowledged that. And that's big because I feel like the Democratic Party has always just been pushed around. And I'm going to be honest with you. The Republican Party has just pushed around the Democratic Party. And it comes back to the thing, you know how Joe Biden said that the vote is sacred? Vroon, do you believe that the vote is sacred?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Why wouldn't I believe it?
If the vote is so sacred, then why do we allow Republicans to disenfranchise individuals? Why are we so... I mean, like, I understand that we don't allow them. Yeah.
Because the thing is that sometimes we have... You know, in a Republican-controlled state like Georgia, mm-hmm. we try our best to stop that. And the fact of the matter is, because they have control, we can't really do much. And the way we get around that is by increasing voter turnout. Stacey Abrams is a perfect example. Stacey Abrams mm-hmm. had her election, let's not argue about it, stolen from her by Governor Kemp, who was a Secretary of State during that election campaign. And so since the election was stolen, Stacey Abrams had nothing she could do about it because every single branch of the Georgia legislature, the governorship, and every single other department was controlled by Republicans. She resorted not to storming the Capitol of Georgia. She resorted to increasing the vote.
Damn.
And that's how Democrats fight it. Damn. Right? Democrats don't storm the Capitol. Democrats create voting drives to get people out and get Joe Biden elected. Democrats get the House majority and Democrats get the Senate majority. And that's how I think that we crossed that. And so, yes, there has been change in Georgia. Sure, we couldn't control what was happening in Georgia, but we're trying every single day. And that's why me, you, every single person who watches this podcast has been part of a growing grassroots movement in our state to increase voter turnout and to get people out, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, to get
vote.
People out.
Yes, that's been- vote. That concludes the hour segment of this podcast. To listen to or watch the remainder of this episode, head over to polititeen.com and click the watch tab in the top right. Beyond that, thank you for listening to another episode of Polititeen.